How many teenagers do you know who are making millions of dollars from companies that they have started? Donna Fenn says there are quite a few sprinkled all over the United States. Her new book, Upstarts, How Gen Y Entrepreneurs Are Rocking the World of Business and 8 Ways You Can Profit from Their Success, profiles the businesses founded by more than 60 of these entrepreneurs, all born between 1977 and 1997, which makes them between 12 and 32 years old today. Two of the upstarts Donna has written about are 32-year-old Shazi Visram, founder and CEO of Happy Baby Food, and 31-year-old Darren Paul, CEO and founding partner of the advertising firm Knight Agency. And I'm very pleased to welcome both of them to our show today, along with Donna. Hi.
Hi.
Welcome all. Shazi and Darren, do the teenagers in the book make you feel old?
They do, actually. I'm on the older side of it, so I'm in awe of their accomplishments as well.
Well, how old were you when you started your business?
26.
Uh-huh. So you were already an old-timer.
Yeah, kind of.
And what about you, Darren?
I've been an entrepreneur since I graduated college in 2000, but have Knight Agency for 6 years now.
Donna, how did you locate all the young entrepreneurs to interview for this book?
Well, there are so many of them that they were not all so very difficult to find. I used a lot of different resources. I drew upon Inc. Magazine's 30 Under 30 list, and I tapped the entrepreneurs on the Inc. 500 list that I knew were under 30. Inc. was really generous in making that available to me. I just put the word out to all my different networks. I think I found Shazi because I was at the Mass Conference for Women in Boston a couple of years ago, and I put out the word that I was looking for young entrepreneurs, and somebody mentioned her name to me.
I would have thought that with this generation, you just simply go to Facebook.
Well, when I first started writing the book, it was not so common for somebody my age to be on Facebook, I have to tell you, although I got there very quickly. But yeah, they're very easy to find. You put up the word to some contacts, and they just...
And you discuss how social media influences Gen Y companies. How does that work?
Well, I mean, I think all of these Gen Y companies are on Facebook and increasingly using Twitter now, not only as sort of a social networking tool, but also to market their products and services. I know, Shazi, you have a Facebook page. Mm-hmm. Darren has a Facebook page, I think, and I think both of them are using Twitter. Most of the people in my book are on Facebook now.
And does using Twitter, for example, actually have any effect on the success of the business, or are you just simply doing it because people are Twittering these days?
Well, we kind of have a unique position in that we're a creative digital agency, so this stuff is our business. We use it for our own company, but we also help shepherd brands into Twitter and Facebook as a creative digital agency. So we believe it works tremendously well and is helping to rewrite the rules of advertising.
Mm.
And for us, we're working on developing and creating a lasting brand in the baby space. So it's such a special tool to reach new moms out there who actually Twitter quite a bit. And it's brilliant for market research. So, you know, that's, to me, is one of the most useful parts. It's not necessarily, I mean, of course, we tell people when we have a special promo at Babies R Us or something like that. But really, you can learn so much about the products that you're looking to create from the tweets out there.
But Donna, you say technology isn't the most significant factor in Gen Y business success, that it's really about the affinity for teamwork?
I think they're using technology brilliantly, but they're using technology to collaborate. And so they're using technology like Twitter and Facebook. They're using collaborative technology like Basecamp to communicate with people who may be in their companies but have virtual offices. They're using technology to make their businesses more efficient.
Well, what happened to that old independent-minded entrepreneur who took pride in everything that he did on his own?
He or she is not going to survive so well in this new collaborative economy, because I think the lone wolf entrepreneur notion is not romanticized very much by this generation.
Shazi, one of the 8 aspects of Gen Y businesses described in the book is a commitment to social action. And when you founded your company, Happy Baby Food, did you intend to make social responsibility a part of the business plan?
Absolutely. It's actually, that was something there for me before I even had the idea for the company or founded it. I felt like in life nowadays, those of us who have this opportunity to kind of control your life and really do do something that's meaningful to you. I felt like I had a calling in entrepreneurship, and I knew that I would start a business one day. But I also felt that, you know, creating a business that had the potential to create an impact would be my life's calling. And so when I had the idea for the company, I also thought, you know, there's a really synergistic way to build in social responsibility. And so for every unit of any product we sell, we also feed a starving child in Africa for an entire day through a nonprofit partnership that we've worked out.
And Darren, your company, Knight Agency, also incorporates a philanthropic mission?
Absolutely. We've been working with an organization called Keep a Child Alive since year one in business, devoting energy and resources to helping build their organization. It's been tremendously rewarding. My partner, Evan, sits on the board for Keep a Child Alive.
Now, I used to work in advertising, and we would do pro bono work for causes that we believed in once in a while. But is this the same sort of thing?
Absolutely. Yep.
But I think the difference is that most mature companies would wait until there are profits, there are significant revenues, and say the best thing I can do for society is build a successful, big, profitable business. I think the difference with this generation...
And then I went to my boss and I said, I want to help these people. Can I have a little time to do that and use the company's facilities?
Right, exactly. But I think with this generation of entrepreneurs, as with Darren and Shazi, the social mission begins at the very outset before there's even a dime of profit.
Well, how did the Gen Yers get so team-minded? Do you think it's because of Facebook and all and Twitter?
Oh, no, I think it started long before that. I mean, I think that, you know, probably unlike people of my generation, they've been working in teams since they were very, very young. I mean, you think about, you know, Pee Wee soccer when they're four and team projects in school, volunteering in teams. They're just a very, very collaborative, team-oriented social generation.
Although ad agencies have always been teams. In fact, the old names of ad agencies were, you know, Doyle Dane Birnbach and Batten Barton Durston and Osborne. There was a reason for that.
Absolutely, yeah. Teams, the team structure is, I would say, will last forever. But being able to tap into the internet and having a social mission at the heart of what you do helps to recruit great people.
Well, do you think that there is something that happened in the childhoods of Gen Yers that account for this new emphasis on business philanthropy?
Well, I think they grew up with parents who, you know, came of age in the 60s and 70s, who had a very socially responsible aesthetic and passed that on to their kids.
Is that what happened with you, Shazi?
Absolutely. My father is from Tanzania. And so the organization that I chose to work with is in Malawi, which borders Tanzania. And I've been many times and always felt extremely blessed to have had the education and the opportunities I've had and realized that, you know, you can a dollar here or a few pennies here makes such a huge impact there. And seeing, you know, just seeing the potential to create a business model where you could do both, create abundance here as well as give back, it just seems like a no-brainer.
Was Happy Baby Food the first company that you founded?
I actually had a media and marketing buying consultancy prior called Maven Marketing. But Happy Baby is the first brand.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So the entrepreneurial spirit was there no matter what?
I definitely for me. I just truly believe in creating abundance and being able to manage those resources in a way that with values that you respect, and it's easy to do that when they're your values.
Well, Darren, did you work for other people before you started your own?
No, I didn't. I started a company directly out of college.
And that was a different company as well?
It was.
So you just keep on starting them until one becomes a success?
So far, that's what we're working with.
This is a generation of serial entrepreneurs. That you know, most of the people in the book, you know, the average number of companies started was, you know, a little over two. So many people in the book, this was not their first company.
Not just cereals, but baby food.
Yeah.
my guests, was that a bad joke? Yeah. My staff is saying ooh to me. My guests are Donna Fenn of Inc. magazine and author of a book called Upstarts. How Gen Y entrepreneurs are rocking the world of business and eight ways that you can profit from their success. The eight ways including the sorts of things that tie these entrepreneurs together that we might not have found in previous entrepreneurial generations.
Exactly.
And two of the how many people do you profile here altogether?
There are about 64 in the book.
Wow. Well, two of them are here. Shazi Visram, founder and CEO of Happy Baby Food, and Darren Paul, CEO and founding partner of the advertising firm Knight Agency. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Shazi, your company sells frozen organic baby food, very different from the stuff that we'd find in the supermarket?
Yes, we have six different lines of baby foods for, well, baby and toddler foods, and they're basically an alternative to the traditional processed foods that have been available since the 30s.
Did this grow out of having a child of your own and thinking about what you want to put in the kid's mouth?
Well, it grew out of I had the idea from a friend who had just had twins. I'm working on my first happy baby now.
Yeah,
so.
I saw you have a little belly.
Yeah.
I thought either you've been drinking a lot of beer or
maybe, I wish.
Maybe
no.
You have a baby.
This is my first human happy baby. So.
And Darren, how did you wind up in the advertising business?
We sort of happened into it. I started the company with two friends and college buddies. And we really just looked at the advertising market and felt like we could do it better and felt that everything we saw really felt contrived and manufactured, and it came from Madison Avenue, and so we wanted to put our own spin on it and felt that the opportunities that were emerging in the world of digital were really exciting and that we wanted to put our stamp on that.
And what kinds of accounts have you picked up?
We currently work with a variety of different businesses ranging from Hanes and Champion to Dial and Avon and Keds, the shoe company, and a whole range of different clients.
Don't a lot of young people want to put their own spin on products, though?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think Shazi and Darren are very typical in that I think both of their businesses were born from looking at the way things are and thinking, I can do it better. It's a big theme among this generation.
And you say in this book that an increasing number of young people have been drawn to entrepreneurship. Why do you think that is?
I think
is
there
it a change in the way American business is being conducted?
No, I think there are a lot of reasons for it. I think, first of all, this is the first generation, really, that's grown up with entrepreneurial role models. They had Steve Jobs and Anita Roddick and Richard Branson, and then people of their own generation like Mark Zuckerberg, the Google guys, the YouTube guys. And so we didn't have that when we were growing up. Our big business role models were people in big corporations, not entrepreneurs. Secondly, they've gone through a period where they've seen their parents laid off by big corporations. So being employed by large companies no longer seems safe or attractive. There's all these corporate scandals that makes working for the corporate world very distasteful almost. And then, you know, add to all this the recession. And really what you've got is a sort of a perfect entrepreneurial storm for kids.
Well, I want to get to the recession in a moment, but aren't there also entrepreneurship programs at colleges these days?
There are. I started developing Happy Baby at the Columbia Business School Greenhouse Program, which is like an incubator for students who want to truly start their businesses upon graduation. And it's such a great way to kind of get your feet wet in a comfortable environment before launching.
We spoke to David Chang, who started a very successful restaurant called Momofuku, without any idea of what he was doing, he said. And at a certain point, he got a letter from the IRS saying, you owe us a lot of money in taxes. And he said, oh gee, what is this all about sales taxes? That didn't happen with the two of you. At Columbia, I'm sure they tell you all about paying your taxes.
Absolutely, yeah. We had quite a bit of time to do some serious planning. So,
no IRS troubles for us. We've certainly managed accordingly. I did study entrepreneurship in school, and it was probably the closest thing to almost talk me out of being an entrepreneur, actually. Just in that it was so academic, and I think for an entrepreneur who has kind of it in their DNA, it's almost too manufactured, and you want to be able to play by your own rules. But
you know something, Darren, I think that since you were in school, I think these programs have changed a lot. I mean, you're right to note that there's been a huge increase in college and universities in entrepreneurship programs. But what I'm noticing now is that these programs have shifted to not being less academic and to really helping kids who are coming into college with their own businesses already grow them. In fact, after I leave here, I'm going to the Global Student Entrepreneurship Awards ceremony down on Wall Street.
Well, the youngest person in your book is 14 years old.
Yeah.
Didn't go to any college program.
Well, you know, he was 14 when he started, but then he got wiped out after 9/11, and he went back to University of Richmond, and he actually did study a little bit of entrepreneurship in college.
And I'm actually now teaching at the same school, and so trying to give back. I think it's all about access and entrepreneurs being able to team up and talk and ask questions with real entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm.
My guests are Donna Fenn, Darren Paul, and Shazi Visram. Donna Fenn has written a book called Upstarts, How Gen Y Entrepreneurs Are Rocking the World of Business and 8 Ways That You Can Profit from Their Success. It's published by McGraw-Hill. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. My guests include Donna Fenn, who is the author of Alpha Dogs, How Your Small Business Can Become a Leader of the Pack. She's a contributing writer at Inc. magazine. And her latest book is called Upstarts, How Gen Y Entrepreneurs Are Rocking the World of Business and 8 Ways That You Can Profit from Their Success. It is published by McGraw-Hill. Donna, you've been writing about entrepreneurs for a long time,
but
you're not an entrepreneur.
I'm not. Well, I feel very entrepreneurial these days, but it's true. I've never started a business.
What do you mean when you say that people in this age bracket have less to lose than older generations?
Well, I mean, I think they have a lot of support networks from their parents, obviously. I mean, if they, a lot of them don't have families and mortgages and college tuition to pay. If they're strapped for cash, they can always live in the basement or sleep on somebody's futon or eat ramen noodles indefinitely. And so I think they're more prone to take risks because they do have financially very little to lose.
Has the internet changed the overhead costs for starting a company?
Oh, my goodness, for startups in every generation.
Now you can
absolutely
start up in your basement instead of going
or
and having an office.
Or your spare bedroom or in Starbucks. So, yes, anywhere.
And I assume that has changed not only the overhead costs, but also the ability to connect to a lot of people very quickly. You used to have to send out a mailing. That you don't send out. You're nodding your head, Darren.
Yeah, no, we use the internet in really every way imaginable. Mm-hmm.
But what about the other side? Right now we're going through an economic downturn. Is that making it more difficult to start a business and keep it afloat, or does this mean more business opportunities?
In our case, it's actually provided a great opportunity in that we really exist specifically and at the heart of kind of what's happening in digital. And so we're seeing a tremendous uptick actually in finding this to be a great opportunity for us.
The same for you, Shazi?
Well, we're working on kind of creating a new category within grocery, which is this premium organic baby food. So because it's a new category, in a sense, we only kind of have up to go. So we've been able to really expand. And thankfully, the very last thing that one would cut out of their budget is going to be their infant's nutrition. So we're in a good place.
Well, Donna describes some unorthodox marketing methods that you use to spread the word about your baby foods. What's the most important strategy in reaching your customers?
I mean, to build a brand, I really believe that having a one-on-one connection with the brand is so important. And while we do make use of a lot of the digital tools out there, our most important workforce is this team of 50 moms that we have that are out in their local communities, and they teach how to make your own baby food cooking classes and nutrition courses and do demos and samplings, and they really connect with local moms, and that really is huge for us.
In the old days, if you wanted to do a demonstration, you hired one of these professional demonstrators. Now you're hiring the people who actually use the product?
Exactly. And they're a peer. So you walk into a Whole Foods and it's someone you might have gone to high school with.
But also, this is kind of like an online review, isn't it?
It is. I mean, we get quite a few of those, but especially with new mothers, because for the most part, we're not having babies on the same street as our sisters and our grandmothers and our mothers anymore. They really connect in moms groups, and word of mouth becomes so important when it comes to their decision making.
How soon after launching did you achieve nationwide distribution?
Well, we expected to take about 24 months, and it happened in 5 months.
Wow.
Yeah, it was amazing. Well, we found this great niche where not only are we creating a premium product, retailers hadn't had the opportunity to make a high margin on baby food since the 30s. So there was kind of a push and a pull from moms and retailers alike.
Donna, the online startup T-shirt company Threadless also blurs the line between consumer and customer.
Yes.
Is their business model similar to Happy Baby Food?
No, I don't think it is at all. I mean, I think that Threadless actually has their customers creating T-shirts. So, in fact, their company is really one big online T-shirt creation contest where people are submitting designs, the community is voting on the best ones, and then they get produced.
Do you think that a Gen Yer understands a brand, the concept of brand, differently than older customers?
I think they really understand the concept of brand. I think they latch on to brands very intensely. That's not to say that they're brand loyal forever. I do think they're a little bit, they can be fickle, but they're very, very focused on brand. And I think one of the things that this generation of entrepreneurs does is they know how to create brands specifically for their generation.
How did that work for you, Darren? I mean, you're 25, and your partners found an ad agency in New York, where there are thousands of ad agencies.
Well, I mean, we just weren't identifying with brands, and that was part of it. And we wanted to kind of bring our entrepreneurial spirit to brands and help them relate directly with consumers. Mass media we saw was changing, and so we wanted to really capture that opportunity and allow brands to speak in very much a human voice.
Where did you get investment capital?
We started out of our apartments, actually, leveraging credit cards and sales drove our business.
And I wonder how you pick up clients like MTV and Nike.
Cold calling.
You just call Nike, say, hey, we have a new ad agency and we're doing something different.
Nike, we worked for a very short period of time several years ago. So we had been in business for a few years before we started working with those guys. But really, the MTVs of the world was a year one.
I'd imagine in some cases it actually helps when they know that you're young. In other cases, they wonder whether you know what you're doing if you're 25 years old.
Both of those.
Shazi, how did you wind up getting financed?
Well, it's been a long road. I also have a partner, Jessica Rolfe, and the two of us began raising some seed financing from friends and family here in New York. And since then, we've managed to raise quite a bit of private finance. But, you know, it's literally taking the first step, putting together the presentation, and going out there and beginning. But we launched the company on about $550,000 that we raised over the course of a few months.
Donna, you advise startup businesses to take a cue from the Gen Yers and launch, quote, imperfectly but quickly.
Yes, exactly.
In the past, they would have told you that's a bad idea.
Well, I mean, I think what happens, I think business happens so quickly that if you don't launch quickly, then someone else will.
But you're working out the kinks as you're doing business?
You're working out the kinks as you're doing business because your customers are going to tell you what to do next. If you spend a lot of time fussing around with R&D, you may come out with a product that your customers don't connect with at all. Perfect example is the finger toothbrush. What a disaster that was. If they had done a little bit of market research, put it out into the market more quickly, then it might have taken hold, or they might have decided not to do it at all.
I don't know the finger toothbrush.
See, there you go.
I mean, under the worst of circumstances, I've used my finger as a toothbrush.
It's a little thing that you slip over your finger.
That's a good idea.
That a very large consumer products company spent a lot of money pushing that never took hold.
Uh-huh. And your reason for that is?
I'm sorry, my reason?
It seems like a good enough idea. Why do you think certain things catch on and other things don't?
Well, I mean, I think what happens is that products are developed sort of without enough attention being paid to exactly whether that product is going to be embraced by a large number of consumers. And a lot of it is just luck, I think. But I think the sort of launching, getting it out there quickly to see what consumers think of it is a good idea.
Well, the old way is you did a lot of research, and then you did a lot of testing. Mm-hmm. And then you launch the product big.
Mm-hmm.
And the feeling now from what I'm from reading your book is that you bring a certain amount of passion, mm-hmm. a certain amount of belief in what you're doing, and you start small and You hope that it catches on. And if this one doesn't work, then you start another business.
Right, and you're putting it out there and asking people to give you feedback. What do you like about this? What don't you like about it? How can I make it better? And that, what happens there is that all of that good feedback goes into the second iteration of your product, which is ultimately far more, you know, successful than the first.
Well, Shazi and Darren, do you think of your businesses as labors of love?
I do, absolutely. For me, every aspect of it is so positive and great to be a part of. It's just, it's fun to live every day. And that's the only reason that I could possibly work so hard. So absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you're also doing, there is that philanthropic side. So when, I'm sure that when you get down, you remind yourself you're doing good for the world.
Sure. I mean, at this point, I think we've probably helped feed more than 60,000 children through this program. So, yeah, there's nothing better than knowing that.
Do customers respond to that, knowing that when they buy this product that they're also helping a kid in Tanzania?
I think they really do. A lot of our customers understand that what we're doing has a purity of purpose, and when it comes to building a brand, that's what you want, is that sincere authenticity, and they can really see that. It's on our packaging, and I think it feels good to buy the very best nutrition for your baby, but knowing that you're helping another child incentivizes you to purchase that product over another.
Darren, hasn't your philanthropic mission helped keep your employees around?
It's definitely something that they view as positive, and we do as well. And it is absolutely a labor of love, and this just kind of helps to fuel it. I mean, it's not every day in a marketing or advertising job you can help to save lives. You're typically shilling products and helping to drive big brands, but in this case, we really get to help out.
Now, Donna, how many of the 63 businesses here do have a philanthropic side?
I think, of the ones covered in the book, I think quite a few do, but what I did was I surveyed all of the people who I interviewed for the book, and that was about 150 or so. And of those that responded, 70% said that they had a social mission, which I thought was incredible.
And that is unique. I mean, that's something that never happened in the past unless you had some kind of political agenda.
Right. I think that's true. I think that's absolutely true. I mean, this is a very, very philanthropic.
I can't imagine
idea.
General Motors saying, well, we're making cars, but what we really want to do is to feed starving children India.
No, absolutely not. Very different now.
I guess that comes out of changes in the world, perhaps people going to see films that Al Gore makes?
Well, there is definitely a major increase in cause marketing and brands getting behind social missions, because I think that they've listened to the market and they've seen the market react, and they've seen brands who do have a good side to them have actually increased market share. And so when that happens, they tend to perk up.
I've seen problems in other kinds of idealistic companies that have gotten real big. Google, for example. Mm-hmm. I mean, Google starts off as a company that seems to be driven a lot by idealism, and mm-hmm. now people are wondering mm-hmm. whether it's trying to take over the world.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That does happen when companies get big. It becomes harder and harder to sort of stay true to your mission and to remain true to the values that you started the company with.
But do you think that Gen Yers are taking a different attitude towards work than their parents did?
I do. I think actually for this generation, there are a couple of things going on. First of all, work is a real 24/7 mashup for them. It's not 9 to 5.
A lot of people in the past, you'd say, what do you do? And they would tell you their hobby.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think this is the first generation that expects work to be fun and meaningful. And, you know, my reaction is bravo. I mean, it should be fun and meaningful for everybody. But I think that, they're willing to work extremely hard, but they may not want to work 9 to 5. Maybe they want to take off on a Friday and then work on Saturday or a Sunday. So I think there's that. I think they want their companies to allow them to have sort of philanthropic values. And I think the kinds of companies that this generation is creating are exactly the kind of companies that they want to work for.
Well, I know when I worked for myself, the great shock was that I didn't have any days off, because if a job had to be done, it had to be done. And so if I had to work Saturday, Sunday, and then all night Monday, I did it. So where's the fun here?
Well, if you don't love it, you're in trouble. That's definitely kind of rule one that I would, share with, aspiring entrepreneurs, because you have to work so hard and tirelessly, and the work is never done when it's your own place. You have to roll your sleeves up and get it done.
Although we do hear that Google offices are like giant amusement parks with gyms, restaurants, video games.
Great strategy. Keep them happy, right. And it'll fuel their passions and work.
And then take over the world.
Correct.
And what about you, Shazi? Well, are you having fun?
I am having fun. I mean, I admit to overdoing it and getting myself overly worked up and too stressed out and tired. And I think there is, you know, balance is important in life. But I also think if, you know, fortune favors the bold, and you know, initially it is a lot of work, but you certainly can get rewarded from that later on. I think the first 3 to 5 years can be pretty taxing.
Well, you're about to become a mother in a few months.
Yep.
That's going to keep you away from the business, isn't it?
I think, you know, it will, but luckily this is one of the beauties of starting your own business. We've created such a warm and inviting culture where, you know, the baby's absolutely welcome at the office, and I have all the baby food in the world and all these great marketing partnerships with Dr. Sears. And so, in a sense, you know, the baby's pretty lucky and well set up, and I'll be able to create my own schedule, which is difficult if you're working for someone else and they have a different maternity plan. So,
Don, did you talk to the various entrepreneurs about how this economic climate will determine the future of their businesses? Is something they're thinking about?
Well, in fact, when I started writing the book, the economy was going gangbusters still when I was researching, and it was really only until towards the end of the writing period that we realized we were kind of in trouble. And so what I did is I went back and I did survey them, and I made sure that everybody was going to stay in business when the book came out. And I also asked them how the economy was affecting their companies. And amazingly, 20% said the recession had actually been good for their companies. A sort of big middle percentage said that the sales might be lower in 2009, but that they were stable.
Because they can adjust to fluctuations in the economy? By the nature of their company?
Yeah, I mean, a lot had stories like Darren, where, you know, they were in industries that actually were profiting from the recession because they were, you know, they were either jumping on a trend or they were in some way creating products or services that were saving money for clients.
Now, we've been talking about Gen X or Gen Yers, but I'm assuming other people, especially people right now who are out of work, who are thinking about starting that company mm-hmm. that they've always fantasized starting, will want to learn something from this, even if they even if they were not born between 1977
Absolutely.
And 1997.
Absolutely.
So are the lessons to be learned here applicable to people who are in their 50s, 60s?
I think the lessons are applicable to everyone. And I think that, you know, each chapter in the book talks about a different characteristic of this generation. And I think the whole idea of collaboration is key. I always tell people I think that's the most important aspect of this generation, is that they're very collaborative and very team-driven. That is a theme that runs throughout the book.
And I guess the two of you would agree. If somebody would just said to you, Darren, I'm starting a business. What's the first thing I should know?
You need to be passionate about what you're getting in business for, first and foremost. And, I mean, everything else kind of gets behind that. Is there a market, obviously, for it? Where are you going to make money? How are you going to make money? What point?
Well, there are new babies being born all the time.
Yes.
So you know that there's a market for your product, Shazi, but is that it?
Well, I mean, I agree with Darren. I think, you know, the times dictate the opportunity, and you just need to be on trend with what the market is truly looking for.
I want to thank you all for being with us. Donna Fenn's book is called How Gen Y Entrepreneurs Are Rocking the World of Business and 8 Ways That You Can Profit from Their Success. It's published by McGraw-Hill. And also here are two of the people profiled in the book, Darren Paul and Shazi Visram, and I want to thank you all so much for being on our show today.
Thank you.
Thank you
so
much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
On tomorrow's show, two reporters who were embedded during and after Sarah Palin's vice presidential bid give us a behind-the-scenes account of her sudden rise, triumphs, and missteps. And then Mary Carr, on her new memoir, Lit. Also, Carrie Fisher stops by to talk about her new one-woman show based on her memoir, Wishful Drinking. and actor Willem Dafoe on his roles in Lars von Trier's controversial new film Antichrist and Richard Foreman's surrealistic play Idiot Savant. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, with help today from Stephanie Bernhard, Andrea Moraskin, and Josh Bell. Dimitri Krasny was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.